This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome. We're recording live on Business by the Numbers from Vision 2024. I have Jay Huff from CarMedX from North Carolina here joining me today to talk everything under the sun, from cash flow, planes, you name it. Just want to especially thank our sponsors for allowing us to be here.
Hey, did you know NapaTrax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets you to learn more about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Visit them online at napatrax.com. That's NAPATRACS.com. Promotive makes automotive recruitment simple. They could be on the job boards and take care of every aspect of the recruiting process, giving you more time to focus on your shop and your customers. Visit them on the web at gopromotive.com.
So, want to welcome Jay here. Jay has a shop in North Carolina. Jay is also an acclaimed public speaker. He is a coach at ShopFix. He is a pilot. He is, everything under the sun. And that's pretty much the topic of this episode. So, Jay, wanted to say first and foremost, thank you for coming. And yeah, give us a little bit of your background here on how you ended up speaking at the Vision Conference.
Yeah, so I didn't know I was going to be here till about a month ago. It's my first time at Vision. I love it. I like meeting people from who I don't usually see. I go to the ShopFix conferences and first time at a non-ShopFix conference in a while. So it's been good. Aaron Stokes, I think he is on a missions trip with his daughter. So super honored to speak in his place. And that's been good.
Yeah.
So it's been good leading up to it.
And just so people know, Jay was told 4 weeks ago or so that he was going to be speaking here and teaching a class on it. And I went in and I watched the end of it this morning. It was really good. And yeah, most people, even if they had 4 months or even 4 years notice to get up and speak, and it had to be 170 or so people. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And a lot of people would not have done it. And also to pull it off like you do with the energy. And the biggest thing about you is you do have a passion for this. I've seen some people talk and you're reading your slideshow, but you don't really care. I mean, you truly do care about this. You care about your shop and the industry too.
Absolutely. And it's only because I think about what my life could have been. So when I was, I 100% believe I should have been face down, like broke, homeless somewhere. But I found ShopFix. I found other people that has survived and not only survived, but succeeded in this industry. So I just feel like I need to give back. And I just feel really passionate about it. I feel like owners feel like they need to fall on the sword, can't be profitable. Profit is like a dirty word. And it hurts to see that. What I talked about today is a stress-free business, how to make your shop stress-free. There's so many owners are stressed out. Think about business, right? Business will either take your time or it'll take your money, right? It'll take one of those two things. But for some reason, auto repair will take both your time and money and your family with it. I'm actually coaching clients that they're going through a divorce. I 100% believe that if I didn't find the help that I found, I would probably be divorced right now. So yeah, I mean, it's just my passion comes from just what my life could have been and just from the gratefulness of having found people that have found success in auto repair.
Yeah, and it's true. And I see a lot of people where they don't quantify their own time as a metric that they look at. End of the year, how much did I make? How much did I not make? And a lot of people don't factor in, what is your hourly rate? That's great that you made this money, but you spent 3,000 hours of your year away from your family, away from your wife, away from whoever to make it. Is that much better than spending half of that, but maybe almost making 90% of the money? And it's really tricky because you are exchanging your time for money and hopefully you're making a profit. I mean, the nightmare situation is, like you say, there are shop owners out there that are working as hard as they possibly can, and they're the lowest paid person in the shop. And then on top of it, they're obviously not happy, and neither is their family. I mean, that is the nightmare situation that people are living through.
Absolutely. I bet you see that a lot when you see, look at someone's P&L, and they're the one working in the shop and turning wrenches, but are they categorizing that correctly? Do they even know that they're not profitable without having to work in the shop? Pretty much, you have a very expensive job is what you got. And yeah.
Well, I think people's natural tendency is no one likes change. And I think a lot of shop owners fit into that to the T. Well, that's how we've always done it. Well, in this industry, this is how you do it. And I think that the biggest thing that I'm impressed about you is you are not that kind of person. You are not afraid to change, grow, and change on a dime. Where do you think that comes from? You know what? Let's try it. It might work. It might not work.
Absolutely. I have an open mind to everything. So I'll give everything a try at least once. You never know. And I think, see, the biggest thing I see in this industry is we're so divided because we think there's only one way to success, that my way or your way is the only way to get there. But what if we put all the best minds together? And what if we're not divided and we just guys, in Unity, we put all our ideas together, and can we just maybe think that there's more than one way to find success? There's more than one way to do something right without bashing each other?
Yeah. And you do see that. And also a lot of it is too, is like, well, how do you define success? That is so different for so many people. And I think also different depending on how old you are and what stage you are in your business. I say a lot, and I see this a lot, is you're young and you're in this industry. It's not very hard to make more money. Just work more. Now you're obviously sacrificing your own time, your own free time, family, if you have that energy, but it's like, it's fairly simple to make more money. Just do more work. We're getting paid $150, $175 an hour labor. It's not too hard to do the math on that, where you want to crank out 60 hours a week, you can make good money. Now, how long can you do that? How can you do that and scale? That's really hard. Now, one of the big things about you is you're able to do this and not be in the trenches and not turn this into two jobs like a lot of self-employed people are. How did you start to make that transition out of the shop? And then to follow up on that, do you think that that actually was where you started to grow more when you were out of the day-to-day type operations?
Yeah, absolutely. So by me defining that success is both having time and money, because you can have all the money in the world, but if you can't go home and have dinner with your family or your wife, then what good is that? Money's nothing at that point. And on the other side of things, if you have all the time in the world, but no money, then you're homeless. Homeless people have a lot of time, but no money. When I figured out that I want both time and money, that's when I realized I want to get out of the shop. Because at the end of the day, we're all on borrowed time. I don't know, hopefully it's going to be a long time from now, but me and you, we're both going to be on our deathbeds at some point. And I want everyone to think from the perspective of their deathbed, like, man, when I'm lying down and when my time is up and the curtain's about to close, am I going to have any regrets? Is anyone going to ever regret not working one more day? But are you going to regret not taking one more vacation, not seeing your kids grow up? My kids are 5 and 7. So I made a very conscious decision, because you're right. I could be working in my shop and make more money. I could have made $100,000 more by me being in the shop, by selling on the front counter. Because as good as my guys are, I think I can outsell my guys only because of the fact that I spend so much money and time in my training, like just getting better. But that's not the most important thing to me. So how I transitioned, once I realized that fact, what I started to do is I got out of the day-to-day operations. And for 2 years, all I did was lead meetings every single morning. Just do one too many meetings. I would stand up in front of my crew, and that's how I led my shop. And then even then, October of 2022, I passed that off to my manager. So now I'm completely hands-off. I think I went into the shop one time this year so far to pick up a rebate check when the shop was closed. So that's by the way, I want to ask this question, okay?
All right, let's
rebate checks. Like, can we just, how do we categorize that? Can we just cash that if it's a rebate check from a parts manufacturer? What's the correct answer for that? I don't know. I think a lot of people have that question. And while we're on that question, what I want to know is, what about your cashback on credit card statements? Is that, how does the IRS view that?
Yeah. So on the rebate checks, I mean, general rule of answer on a lot of this stuff is, if it's deposited and it's deposited into your QuickBooks, your accountant is probably going to look at that as income. Now, if it doesn't go into your QuickBooks account, then it is, no one ever saw it. It never happened. Now, the only thing about this is we don't see this as much in the automotive space, because you guys don't get anywhere to kind of rebates like the tire guys do. The tire guys, yeah, it's massive amounts. But again, they have kind of trimmed it down. Used to have tire guys that would get prepaid debit cards with $5,000, $10,000 on it, because they knew the game. If we give this to the individual personally, they're not going to report it. Now, most of these guys are like, well, we're not going to give you money. We're going to give you statement credits, where it's very hard to dodge it. But more or less, if you're depositing this stuff in there and it's a business check, then you're going to pay tax on it. If you have a personal rebate check, you deposit in your personal account, then it has nothing to do with taxes. The cashback, the rebate stuff on the credit cards is very hard for me to give a blanket answer on this one, because the points versus cashback versus stuff is so different on it. I mean, generally what I tell people is this. If you have a business card, if you have, personally for our business, we use a majority Amex points, or we use American Express, and then those gets points. My thing is, a business credit card, the expenses, the charges go down through are all business expenses. Points are for personal stuff. Because the whole idea is, if you go out, like let's say you're using points. All right, so I got that. I did this and I was able to travel and I was able to go to the Vision show for free. If you went to the Vision show for free, that means that there's no expense, there's no write-off. However, if you said, I'm going to use my credit card and I'm going to pay to go to the Vision show so I can get the deduction, but when I take my kids to Disney World, that also costs $8,000 or whatever it is, we don't get no deduction, but we weren't really trying to get a deduction for that. Yeah.
I love that. And that's kind of what we're doing. So
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. And that's why I always give like the acronym on it. It's credit card on the business, points are personal on it. The cash back stuff, I mean, even the tax law on the stuff gets a little bit tricky because some of it is a little bit of a bait and switch. Well, that is not taxable, but then you can't deduct what you used it for, but don't use your points for business. Use it for something fun. Just absolutely. Like we were talking about Ford. Like that is your payment back to your family or your friends or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people get lost in this and it's very easy to work yourself to death as a self-employed person. It's a little bit harder to work yourself to death if you're working for someone else, unless they're willing to pay you a ton of overtime. They're going to be like, Jay, go home. I'm not paying you any more time and a half. What are you doing here? How many people in this show right now, shop owners, are probably putting the most hours of all their team? A lot. Nose to the grindstone and they just do it, which is really hard. And the quote, you pretty much said it before, but no one on their deathbed ever looks back and says, you know what? I wish I spent less time with my kids. No one ever says, you know what? I should have worked more. I should have made more money. No, when you get to that point in your life, you get the clarity of, all right, money does not mean anything until you have someone to share it with or you're happy and you're enjoying it. And I think also a lot in this industry, you see a lot of people burn out. It's like, yeah, I'd burn out too if I was working 3,000 hours for 20 years straight and just not really making much money on it. It's tough. And this is a hard industry. It's ever changing on it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that is unique, but you obviously have been able to figure it out faster than a lot of other people. Now, question for you is, there's always a big division, shop owners, technicians. There's a lot of technicians that say, well, your boss is getting $185 and I only get $35. Because whenever a customer gives you money, Jay has no other expenses. He pockets all of it and gives the technicians the crumbs. Now, when a lot of technicians become shop owners, they get a rude awakening of, oh, this is why there is markup. How did you kind of, or have you been able to kind of tiptoe the line of, I want to be a good boss, I want to be compassionate to you, but also, no, I'm not going to be in the trenches. I'm not going to be there day to day.
Yeah. So honestly, I don't want to be the only person that makes money in my business. I feel like I make pretty good money, especially for the amount of work I do. And 100%, I agree. Like your employees will think that if you do a $200,000 a month, they probably think that you're making $200,000 a
maybe
month.
Maybe 190, right?
Right. Yeah. But see, they don't see the expenses behind it. The gross, out of your gross profit, you're having to pay for insurance, the rent, the marketing. I mean, it's really expensive. I mean, you see that on a month-to-month basis on how expensive it is to run a shop. But I feel like you and your employees, I feel like we need to be on the same boat because it's not employee versus owner. And a lot of that has to do with the pay plan. So if you pay your employee no matter what at an hourly rate, so if they make $25 an hour no matter what, then yeah, they're going to probably feel some animosity towards you. But if you have a business and if you can sell the dream and say, hey guys, think about something that you really want. What do you want? What do you want in life? Do you guys want more land? Do you want a new house, a new truck? Sell the dream. In this industry, some businesses and some owners see flat rate as a dirty word, right? Oh, you're paying flat rate. Oh, you're undercutting your technicians. You don't want to pay them a lot. No, that's the opposite. I want to give you more opportunity to make more money, to have skin in the game. And some people are going to be like, they're going to cut corners. No, they're not. Not if they truly care about your business, because they know if you're flat rate, then they know it requires customers to keep coming back for them to make money. So you're in the same boat. My advisors are 100% commission. That might not be legal in your state. It's legal in my state, I believe. If you're in California, I don't know how you guys do business.
No, we always just say, this is 49 state legal. If it's California, you probably can't do it.
But we're in the same boat. We all have something that we're working towards.
Yeah.
And God, that's what you have to have. You have to want something. And if you're just capped, if your pay is capped, then can you dream?
Well, I think it's also a really hard conversation, right? Because, you know, when people talk about productivity and it's like, if you have a productivity issue and people are salary hourly, it's a very hard conversation. So, Jay, I would like you to double your work, but you're going to make the same amount of money. That is very hard. Now, how much of this do you think is finding the right people? Because there's also people out there that are like, if I'm flat rate, I'm just going to live off my guarantees. I'm going to live off 30 hours because I value my free time and ease of operations versus money. Have you came across people where you're like, that is actually a very good technician, that is a very good advisor, but maybe not right for the culture or what we're trying to build here?
Absolutely. Because so this is what I've realized about most people. Most people, and that's me included, right? We're all lazy and we're greedy. Lazy and greedy, right?
So the American dream.
So this is what I realized. I mean, if you do have a guarantee, if you're going to guarantee a technician 30 hours a week, what ends up happening? They bill right around 30 hours.
29, 31.
Yeah, that's what happens. In my shop, we don't have a guarantee, but let me ask you this. Is it going to be ethical for me to hold a technician in my shop? And if they're averaging 25 hours a week, is that ethical? Are they going to make enough money? They're not. So they're probably not going to work out. And because they cannot meet the performance requirements, we're going to let them go.
Oh, that's a really cool way to look at it. So instead of saying like this guarantee is like training wheels for you, it's like if you need a guarantee, this is probably not the best business for your business because it's not going to be something that's going to be profitable for you if you cannot kind of get out this kind of production.
Absolutely. Because I mean, you have to be self-motivated. I don't want them to look and see what the guarantee is. Now, as owners, we have a duty to provide enough cars. And so as an owner, if I see that my technicians are not billing out enough hours and cannot make ends meet because we didn't do enough marketing, because we didn't get enough cars in the door, then that's 100% on me. And that's my fault. And then if that's the case, absolutely, I'm going to pay them their time.
Yeah.
But if we have plenty of cars coming in, if we're doing the right thing, if we give them enough cars to work on, if they don't make enough hours, then that's on them. And I'm sorry if you guys are averaging 20 to 25 hours a week and can't make ends meet. I hate writing low paychecks.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the only one making money.
No, you want to be writing those big checks. If you're making $120,000 a year as one of my technicians, we will be the happiest person to write it. And I think that's honestly refreshing because a lot of people came from the dealership side where it's the opposite. The people that were the highest paid technicians at a dealership always have a target on their back from management when it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, you paid that master dealer tech $160,000 a year, but he probably built out $1 million. It's kind of short-sighted to look at the overall cost. Now, how do you draw that line? How do you figure out where it's like, guys, we had a slow week, it wasn't good, or I need to step in and make sure that these guys, is there actual numbers on this or is it more just kind of a feel thing?
Honestly, I haven't had to, we've been pretty busy. We've been blessed. And so I haven't really had to do, we've had consistently decent car count.
Yeah.
What I do want to say is for those people that are salaried out there and the owners, I want them to kind of calculate how much you're paying a technician per build hour. Because you can calculate that. You can take your payroll costs and divide it by the actual build hours that specific technician build out. And what I'm seeing, for some reason, $25 an hour, that's like the pay that everyone's paying the technicians if it's on an hourly basis. It's $25 an hour plus maybe 5 hours of overtime. It's $1,200 a week. And from what I found, those technicians that are on that $1,200 a week guarantee, they usually bill around 20 hours. That's what I've seen from my clients that move over to ShopFix. And so if you do the math, you're paying these guys $60 an hour per build hour. $60. I mean, that's the highest paid. I mean, my highest paid guys, I stole a guy that was at the same dealership for 21 years, got all the certifications. He was one semester away from getting a mechanical engineering degree from NC State, which is one of the top programs in the nation, a true unicorn. And I'm paying him $50 an hour. So if you have a mediocre tech that's kind of dragging his ass and don't really give a crap about your business, you're paying him $60 per build hour. And all I want to say is, would he be excited if you gave him $40 an hour, bumped it up to $40 an hour and say, I'm going to give you $40 an hour for everything you turn. Is he going to see the upside of that? Or is he going to think, oh man, my owner, he wants to make more money. So he's actually giving me a pay cut.
Yeah. And I think that if you have the right person, or the wrong person, they could look at it either way. They're both probably right, depending on the perspective of it. But yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It's like going to one of these shop owners groups and say, should I? It's just like you want to start trouble going one there and be like, I'm starting a shop. Should I do flat rate or salary? It's like, oh God. You're going to have the pitchforks out on both sides of it. But what I was kind of surprised, we did a benchmark report of all of our clients' numbers. And the funny thing was, is there was no relationship between our profitable shops that were flat rate or hourly. And really what that came down to me and I think showed was, it's not necessarily how the people are paid. It more has to do with who the person is paying them. Like you could go out and you could say, oh, you know what? Listen to Jay, I'm going to do flat rate. If you're still not guiding your people, if you're still not making sure that they're trained, they're motivated, they have the right things, they have cars on this, then who cares? It doesn't matter. And I think some degree, and see if you agree with this, flat rate kind of manages itself. I don't need to tell you what your hours were. You know what your hours are. You know how to make more money. You know how to make less money. And so the paycheck is the manager. If you're salaried hourly and you don't have someone managing that, yeah, people, like you said, people are greedy and lazy. They will do the absolute bare minimum that they can do to still keep their job. Even worse, in this market, they know that there is not a long list of people coming to replace them. So if boss doesn't say a word and I'm cranking out 15 hours a week, why am I going to do 30 hours? Now, do you agree with that logic? Have you seen that coaching people?
I 100% agree with that because hourly will work. But you have to have a very strong leader in place. It's whoever's signing the paycheck. That's if you have a really strong leader in place, then you're probably going to have, I mean, but the only trade-off is you're going to have to probably be in the shop and kind of monitor that on a day-to-day basis.
Or someone's going to have to monitor
that. But you're absolutely right. If you're not a good leader, if you're not a very good manager, then flat rate is going to be a lot easier because on Monday morning, I don't have to go in there and say you did a really bad job. They will actually know by looking at their paychecks. You're right. It does manage itself.
NapaTrax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice, and having a local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, our representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business with a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at napatrax.com. That's NapaTrax.com. Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full-service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always-be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotive, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotive, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and experience the power of Promotive's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team.
I think also this oversimplification on this too is like everyone says, well, how many technicians you got? It's like, well, that technician is equivalent of four of my technicians. Like you said, there are unicorns out there and there are some shops where it's like, you just have really good people and you don't really have to do a whole lot and it's going to go really well. Or you got other ones where it's like, man, you're doing everything right, but these guys just don't know what they're doing. I have a client, they did just over almost $1.2 million in sales last year, and he has one technician. Just like the most bizarre stuff you can imagine. And then I have other people that have four technicians that can't hit $1.2 million. So that's like you said before, there are so many different ways to make money on it, and what might work for the guy down the street might not work for you. Now, what do you think the most overlooked financial metric is that shop owners are not looking at? Like, what is a big thing that you kind of start to focus on or maybe open people's eyes to when you start working with them?
Yeah, so when you ask a shop owner, how well did you do last month? How well did you do last year? They always tell you a revenue number,
sales, right?
Sales, yeah.
But $2 million in sales.
Yeah, but do you keep all your sales? No. Do you even keep your gross profit? No.
Yeah.
Do you keep your net? That's a loaded question, right? Because on your P&L, do you keep all your net? Well, I mean, my debt payments aren't showing up. My car payments aren't showing up. My equipment financing's not showing up. So you have these shop owners really focused on revenue, but they don't care about the cash flow. And they don't realize you're going out of business, that you could show a $120,000 net per year and still run out of cash and go bankrupt because they're not factoring in the debt payments. I mean, I took the EIDL loan. How many of us took the EIDL loan and all these loans, made all these bad decisions in the past 3 years, and we had this debt payment, but we're not factoring that in, and we still have to pay those back? So I think that's
tomorrow's problem, right? That's
right.
Tomorrow's problem. No, it came up in a class, right?
Yeah.
Because it's tricky, and I get it. It's 30 years, 2.75, 3.75% interest. I mean, it is the craziest, cheapest commercial loan we have ever seen and hopefully ever do see. But yeah, I mean, that's scary for a lot of people because it's like, you're young. There's a good chance you could even have these businesses for 30 years. I got people that are 70 years old that owe $500,000. And they say, well, I got 30 years to pay it back. you're 70, like, not to be mean, but I don't want you to still be in the shop when you're 100 years old. And that's the scary part, is that you see this, and a lot of shop owners have used that to reinvest. A lot of shop owners still have this in reserves and are just making interest off of it. But yeah, a lot of people, I don't think, even realize that they were losing money, because a lot of people say, well, I got money in the bank, credit card's still swiping. I look at my bank balance, I never had this much money. But it's like, no, you've been burning money for the last 2 or 3 years. You've been living off of government money. And I would be curious of how much harder this is, because even a normal shop's financials got very complicated when you add PPP, ERTC, EIDL, all of these different things, where it's like, yeah, there is 10 different reasons why you have money in a bank. And it could mean that you still don't actually have any profit.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Just masking all these problems.
Yeah.
And you don't know you have a problem in your shop. It might be even better to not have as much money in the bank, because then you'll know you're not doing a good job and you need to make some changes.
Yeah. No, that is true. Because you know what? And I think that a lot of people have a negative relationship with money. They don't like it. They don't like looking at it. It makes them nervous. And I think that a lot of people like to be deliberately ignorant on this. They're like, oh, I think everything's fine because we still got money in here. But then, yeah, what happens is when you get down, and by the time most people realize, oh crap, I'm broke, that is a really hard position to be in, because you can't go get money quickly. You can get money quickly, but it is not cheap money.
Yeah, not now.
Yeah.
It 3 years ago, right, it was easy, but no one's really lending now.
No.
It's going to be high interest. It's not going to be enough money. Absolutely. It's a different times right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people are facing the music.
Now, let's talk about that. You work with a lot of shops. You see you're in your shop yourself. I mean, what is kind of your forecast that you see? I mean, we have a really strange, and Jay and I talk stocks and talk market. We won't bore you guys with that. But this economy is still, I'm just so flabbergasted, because if I gave you all of the numbers of everything else on there and then said the S&P's at, you would be like, oh, it's in the tank. It's like, no, it's at the highest it's ever been. Like, we have so many different things where you look at these indicators, you're like, we should have already been in a recession years ago. What is your forecast for the industry? What is your forecast for your shop? Or other shops? We in for a good year, bad year? Who the hell knows, or what?
It's a who the hell knows. It's crazy things happening right now, right? Because I'm looking at the asset prices, well, like cost of goods, because I just bought a Corvette, and I've been looking at Corvette prices for the past year. And it was inflated, and finally it just dropped like a tank. Like, it dropped like a rock. I'm in the market for buying an airplane. I'm in the process of buying an airplane right now, and airplane prices are going down too. All these prices are going down, but stock market's still hitting 52-week highs. And then, I don't know, like, you look at crypto, it's all-time highs right now. Like, Bitcoin hit there, like, almost at the all-time high. I don't know. It's just crazy market. Who the heck knows? I do know that people are losing their jobs. Like, tech market, they're still laying people off. But NVIDIA just going crazy. I don't know. What I see from my shop, it's harder to make the sale right now.
Yeah.
People have less money, even though the stock market is up.
That's not most Americans.
And that's not most Americans. But that also tells me is, I don't think we've seen the worst of it. I think this might be just the beginning. So if there's people out there listening, and if you're struggling right now, you might be in for a really, really hard time.
Yeah. And that's what, like, sometimes on the podcast, and we've been talking about this for years since COVID, of like, cash is king, be careful. It's better to have it, not need it, than the opposite. And I think that's the big thing that telling a lot of people of, like, there is so much volatility on this. They measure this stuff. It could go up, it could go down. We could have a soft landing. They could raise rates again and completely cripple everything. And like we've seen in a lot in the past too, when you have a market like this that's kind of on the edge, all it takes is one event that could lead to the whole house of cards falling down. What do you tell to your shops that you work with on, are you telling them to increase the reserves? You telling them to be a little bit conservative about expansion? Or how do you weigh that aggressive nature of expanding and being an entrepreneur while still being like, I got to make sure my core business and obviously my family is still going to be protected?
Yeah. So with past 3 years, with so many people having so much money, I see so much expansion and people buying second shops, third shops, fourth shops.
Eighth shops, 12 shops.
Yeah, and they're doing all of that off of cash flow and not really knowing if they're profitable. I really want all my clients to really have their ducks in a row. I don't want them to take the risk right now. Or that saying by Warren Buffett, be greedy when others are fearful, be fearful when others are greedy. Well, the past 3 years, everyone's being greedy, so everyone's trying to buy up stuff. But when was it, like January through July of 2020, when everyone was scared? If you bought anything, if you closed your eyes and threw the dart at the stock market, I mean, you made money. If you made anything,
if you bought a house, if you bought a car.
Absolutely. And so I moved from a 6-bay facility to a 10-bay facility. I signed a 20-year lease during that time when everyone's scared. And I got the best deal. I was like, man, I'm just going to sign a 20-year lease because, man, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to get this type of deal anytime else. So past 3 years, if you guys made a huge move when everybody was going to, you probably overpaid for a lot of stuff. And I think if you're kind of on the fence about buying something or not buying something or opening a second shop, I think there's going to be a lot better deals maybe 6 months from now. I don't think the bottom has hit yet.
Yeah. So. We've seen a lot of that stuff dry up. I mean, when, like you said, when COVID happened, there was a lot of screaming deals because people panicked and said, I'm retiring. You can get it for a song. And rates were 1% or ridiculous. And so it's like, I'm getting this. It's free money virtually on this. And then we saw the obvious COVID spike of everything. And businesses were no different. I mean, some of the deals that came across my desk, and I'm looking at buying this shop. It's like, all right, it's average about $100,000 a year in profit. Not bad. They want $1.4 million, no real estate. Like, not really my thing. But again, you could overpay if you're financing at 3%. It's like, this still kind of works. But yeah, those deals have kind of slowed down. Obviously, banks have got more conservative. And the last SBA loan I saw was 9.5% or something like that, which that's a hard pill to swallow. Now, I'm curious how much you take this into consideration for you, but I feel like a lot of people keep on saying, I'm making this, I'm going to do another shop, I'm going to do another one. Like, when is enough enough? Well, how much do you want to make? And like you said, spending time with your family is sometimes in exchange for spending time at your business and making more money. So do you ever kind of look and say, well, you always wanted to make 400 grand. You're now making 600,000. Why are you trying to upset the apple cart? Why wouldn't you be fine tuning that? Or you just trying to set another target and keep on growing to the next level?
Yeah, I feel like you need to grow for the right reasons. Some people look at other shop owners and they're just doing it for status. Like, oh, he's opening a second shop or third shop or fourth shop. And if you don't have your ducks in a row, if you don't have enough cash in the bank, then you're taking unnecessary risk. You're risking your golden goose egg. And you can't be doing that, especially in this market. Because right now, let's be honest, I mean, if Jerome Powell, if he comes out, everyone's expecting him because he's announced that he's going to keep the rates the same. But if he comes in and say, guess what? We're going to raise the rates. What's going to happen then? Dude, that's going to be a bloodbath at that point.
We got banks holding on for dear life that we could start to see institutions falling. I mean, even the banks, I mean, it's also funny because we haven't seen kind of this rate cycle like this while we've had the 24-hour news cycle. I mean, last time we saw this was 07, 08. But you see so much public pressure from these banks and stuff, and they're literally lobbying Jerome Powell to do one thing or the other. Because these banks are like, we are on the very verge of not being able to cover this stuff. But they keep on saying like, all right, well, fall, they're going to start cutting the rates. Now they're saying the spring. And again, if they do not think that there is a chance that they're going to cut rates, or maybe, like you said, even increase rates, yeah, maybe that's the final straw on this. I mean, at least there's no wars going around the world. Everywhere else is pretty stable on this. Again, you add all this stuff together, and it's like, man, what a crazy time. No, I love the idea of what you talk about. Like, you need to build your business for what you want. It should not be a keeping up with the Joneses. Well, why'd you do that? Well, because they're doing this, they're doing that. And yeah, I mean, the unique aspect about our firm is obviously we only work with shops, and we see all shapes and sizes, multi-shop, you name it. There has never been a time in this industry with more multi-shop owners, more independent multi-shop owners. And that's exponential even in the last 5 years. But even if I look at just like my subset of shop, like generally it's, let's call it 50-50. Half are making good money and really good money. The other half are making okay money or losing money. During COVID, absolutely no one was losing money. Like, if you were not making money during COVID, I'm not sure what was going on. And I'm kind of curious if you think it's just like the recency bias of like, well, times can never, they're always good on it. It's like, no, I mean, there's good years and there's bad years.
Yeah, I definitely believe in the boom bust cycle. I mean, last few years, there's definitely an automotive boom. I think it's the greatest boom in the automotive industry in its history.
Since you and I have definitely been doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. Rising tide lifts all ships. Yeah, when the economy's good, when everyone's buying, I mean, everyone was knocking on our doors trying to get into our shops because they couldn't buy a new car. The chip shortage or whatnot, and you couldn't buy a car if you wanted to. There just wasn't the supply, so they were forced to fix their cars. Every auto repair is going to do well during that time.
Yeah. Or how many people are looking of like, I'm 20% up from last year. It's like, well, you went from $100 an hour to $120. So it's like your pricing, or even like on the part side of it, it's like, oh, I went up 20%. Well, that cost of that part went up 100%. So
exactly. So much inflation.
So. Yeah. So to kind of wrap all of this stuff, and like I said, we got to talk financials on here a little bit, some numbers, some metrics. If you're looking at your numbers, well, let's see. Do you look at your numbers on a weekly basis?
Daily basis.
Daily basis. Daily. All right. So let's do this. So if you're advising a shop owner that's saying, I want to start stepping out of my shop, obviously we know that financials are important. If you're not going to be there, the financials are your lifeline to what's going on. So if you're a shop owner, or you're trying to talk to a shop owner that wants to start stepping back, what are you looking on a daily basis? What are you looking on a weekly basis? And then maybe even more of like, all right, what are you doing with that information?
Yeah. So if we know that even with a positive net, you can still go bankrupt. We need to add up every single expense in your business, plus what you need to take home to survive, plus everything that doesn't show up on the P&L that gets taken out of your bank account, like your debt payments. You have to add all that up, and that's your gross profit dollars per month that you need. If you can figure out how much gross profit dollars you need to cash flow even your absolute minimum, then you can figure out your absolute minimum metrics for a daily basis. Because if you aim small, you miss small. A lot of people, what they do is a lot of people use Tekmetric and look at the end of day reports. But if you just look at the end of day reports at the end of every month, that's a lagging indicator. It's like, you can't really pivot from that.
That month was bad. Yeah. We'll try to do better next month.
Yeah, but there's a report called the Hacker Tracker on Tekmetric where it'll show all the tickets that are open that day, what sales you made that day, how much GP dollars you sold that day. Honestly, do I care about percentage? Yes, a little bit to a point, but you can't take percentages to the bank. What you need is solid GP dollars, take it to the bank, and from that, you pay all your expenses plus your debt payments. So that GP dollars per month, it has to equal whatever is being expensed out plus what doesn't show up on the P&L. So yeah, I look at that metric. It's going to be different for every shop, because what's crazy is you see some shops doing huge numbers, huge, like $300,000 a month, but they're still cash flowing negative because they made so many bad decisions up until this point, taking out so much debt, so much loans, or they maybe bought a really expensive business. So it's going to be different for every single owner out there, but you got to figure out how many GP dollars per month you got to make. I would break that down into per day, per advisor, so you can hold them accountable. And if you're not there, what I do is I have all my advisors text them their sales numbers to my manager, all my technicians, because you can break down how many hours each technician needs to do per day. So my technicians also text my manager those numbers. And then at the end of the day, my manager texts me those numbers, because now there's accountability at every level.
Like you went back to sales. Everyone would talk about, oh, what kind of shop you got? Oh, we do 2 million sales, whatever. It's like, who cares? What's your target? Well, we want to do 100,000 in sales. Why? You need to start from the bottom, which is exactly what you did. How much do you need? Because you're building a business to support your business, and no one out there is going to have the same number. Statistically, you might have one, but probably a couple cents, it's going to be off. What do you need to take home? Meaning, what do you need to survive? What kind of debt payments? What's your overhead on it? There's your target. And I need $50,000 in gross profit. And what Jay is talking about when he says, I don't care about gross profit, is within reason. If I get $50,000 of gross profit, I don't really care if that took $100,000 in sales or $120,000. And I think that that is one of the biggest pieces that has allowed you to step away from your business, is because you've said, this is what I need. How you guys do that, you're going to do it different than I am. You might do it worse, you might do it better, and you have to be flexible. Because I think the hardest thing for a lot of shop owners is, I'm going to step away, but you guys need to do it exactly how I do it, all of this. And it's like, you're not going to be able to clone yourself. No one's ever going to do it the way that you do it. But if the end result works out, do you really care?
Nope. That's right.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Jay, I just want to thank you again. Congratulate you on an awesome talk this morning. And yeah, awesome time. Thank you.
Thanks, Hunt. It was great being here. Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.